From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, September 27th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Sounds so good. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven, to be sure. All right, let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, a good exercise for the heart is to bend down and help another up. Yeah, who could argue with that, huh? Assuming, of course, you can still bend down.
I don't think that's funny.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Oh, boy.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
How cool.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Who are they fooling? It's never going to happen. Which is probably a good thing for all of us. All right, kids. It was on this day in 1908. Production of the Model T Ford began at the Paquette Avenue plant in Detroit. That building, by the way, is still there. You know, they built that car for 19 years without changing it. Still a lot of them out there, too, in collector's hands. Occasionally, you might find one as a barn find. And it was on this day in 1941, the SS Patrick Henry was launched, becoming the first of more than 2,700 Liberty ships, a good portion of which ended up at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean.
Houston, we have a problem.
I love this. Argentinian President Javier Milei, in his first UN speech, accused the international organization of human rights hypocrisies and enabling authoritarian regimes. Right out of the box. I mean, you can't get any more blatant than that. And who better than Javier Milei? I hope you've been keeping up with who he is. Yes, he's president of Argentina. But I have a feeling that Javier and Donald are going to be very good friends. They have the same ideals when it comes to politics and leadership. He told the United Nations, Javier Milei, told the United Nations... In New York City, he says, let's see, when was this? This was back on Tuesday. He says, I'm here to warn you that we are at the end of a cycle. The collectivism and moral posturing of the woke agenda have collided with reality. He specifically criticized the Human Rights Council for granting membership to countries like Cuba and Venezuela, both of which, he said, have poor human rights records. You know, Iran was part of that board or that council for quite some time. And I just love this guy, Milei. He said, in this very house, which claims to defend human rights, we've allowed access to the Human Rights Council to bloody dictatorships such as Cuba and Venezuela without the slightest reproach. Now, it sounds great, doesn't it? But the thing that makes this so much better is the fact that he's 100% correct. He's right. He's calling these people out. Both countries have served multiple terms on the council despite repeated international criticism of their domestic human rights practices. And I think with Mr. Milei now coming forward and adding to that chorus, this makes things all the more richer. Oh, I mean, keep an eye on Argentina, unless there's something really wrong with my assessment of politics in that part of the world right now, Argentina is going to shine. Now, of course, we all know Cuba's a one-party socialist state, been that way ever since the late Fidel Castro, took over in, well, he bullied his way into the Capitol building there in Havana in 1959, basically took over by 1960. In fact, that was the first thing that JFK, our new president, John F. Kennedy, when he took office on January 20th of 1961, that was the first thing he had to deal with. Not the Cuban Missile Crisis. That didn't hit until October of 62. But Cuba's been a pain in the U.S. butt for a long time. 60 years and some change. So Malay also turned his attention to the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, a U.N. body tasked basically with monitoring progress on women's rights globally. Countries such as Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Afghanistan have been part of international conversations about women's rights, despite that they have policies at home that punish women for violating strict dress codes or otherwise limit their freedoms. This is very well known. So Malay said, in this very house, which claims to defend women's rights, we have allowed access to the Committee for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women to countries that punish their women for showing their skin. I mean, this guy's got some brass and I love it. So, the UN states on its website that the idea that all human beings, regardless of race, sex, nationality, ethnicity, language, religion, or any other status, are entitled to human rights, and that's built into the foundation of the United Nations. Really? Well, why in 75 years haven't they done anything about it? They haven't. The only thing the United Nations has been successful at since their formation back in, what was it, 1947, 46, 47? They had their first meetings out in San Francisco. Then they went to Flushing Meadows, New York, and met there until the Rockefellers were able to finish construction on their current home there on the East River in New York. But all the United Nations is just a collection of old men who sit around holding meetings and manage to live lavishly. So anyhow, the United Nations also says it works to mainstream human rights within the UN system and collaborates closely with governments in the field to identify, highlight, and develop responses to human rights challenges. For example, earlier this year, the UN Human Rights Office said that China still has many problematic laws and policies in Xinjiang. 2 years after it reported serious violations by the Chinese Communist Party against the Uyghur people. Now, Mr. Malay, Javier Malay, is a self-proclaimed anarcho-capitalist, and he was inaugurated as Argentina's president last year after defeating Sergio Massa, economy minister for Alberto Fernandez's socialist administration. And he did this with a promise to tackle the country's inflationary economy by dollarizing the peso and minimizing government spending. Now, you got 6 million people working in the private sector and pay taxes to maintain 20 million public workers and pensioners in Argentina. And this is according to the Foundation for Economic Education. Since his win, Milei has announced plans to lay off at least an estimated 70,000 state employees. So you see where I'm coming from when I compare him to Donald Trump? Malay said the UN has abandoned its founding purpose and that it was born out of the horror of the bloodiest war in global history with the primary goal of ensuring that it would never happen again. However, it has now transformed into a multi-tentacled leviathan that purports to decide not only what each nation state should do, but also how all citizens of the world should live. That's Javier Milei saying that. And you know, he's right on the money. This is a guy I can get truly excited about. I don't know how long he can serve as president in Argentina. I don't know how long their terms are down there. I assume they're about 4 years. I don't know how many terms he could serve. But man, we got to keep this guy around. And in his speech, Malay also took aim at the 2030 agenda's Sustainable Development Goals, what they call the SDGs, Global Initiative for Sustainable Economic Growth and Environmental Protection. And some of the UN literature supporting SDGs calls for an equitable reduction in the scale of production. Now, the language used reflects degrowth, a formerly radical theory that focuses on shrinking economies in order to use less of the world's resources. And these are the people that should be serving in a gulag somewhere, the people advocating for this. So Malay said that although this is well-intentioned in its goals, it's nothing more than a supranational government program with a socialist slant. If the 2030 agenda failed, as its own promoters acknowledge, the answer should be to ask ourselves if it was not an ill-conceived program to begin with. Well, he said that his own country, Argentina, which is undergoing a profound process of change at the present, has decided to embrace the ideas of freedom. Wow, what a radical concept. And he went on to say, those ideas that say that all citizens are born free and equal before the law, that we have inalienable rights guaranteed, granted by the Creator, among which are the right to life, liberty, and property. Gee, what does that sound like? And he said, Argentina will not support any policy that implies the restriction of individual freedoms of commerce, nor the violation of the natural rights of individuals. Gad, we need somebody in our government to say that. And at a special address at the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland, earlier this year, I will never forget this, Malay said, do not be intimidated by the political caste or by parasites who live off the state. Do not surrender to a political class that only wants to stay in power and retain its privileges. You are social benefactors. You are heroes. You are the creators of the most extraordinary period of prosperity we've ever seen. Wow. So to basically interpret that for you, to kind of, you know, I hate doing this, but I'm going to do it because there's a little bit lost in translation there because, well, let me just put it this way. He was basically telling the people at the World Economic Forum that they are benefactors. Those people that serve in the WEF are benefactors of us. We the working people, we the people who pay the taxes, we the people who support organizations like the United Nations. I like this guy, Javier Milei. He spells a very interesting future for Argentina and maybe even the Western Hemisphere. Got a very interesting how do you do here that hit the fan yesterday. And it revolves around Mark Zuckerberg, the Meta CEO, the founder of Facebook. Very wealthy fellow. And I guess I want to go back to the beginning of this story a little bit by saying that after Facebook mass censored prominent Republicans and even took down the page of President Trump, you remember that from a few years back, now Zuckerberg is reportedly walking back his liberal-leaning tendencies. I'm going to chalk it up to just maturing. I think intelligent people eventually mature, and then they gravitate toward more conservative beliefs. Now, you notice I said conservative beliefs, not Republican beliefs. Now, a recent report by the New York Times revealed that those closest to Zuckerberg believe that he's now mostly aligned with libertarian views, which is understandable. Now, the source further revealed that Zuck's plans to start cracking down on far-left activism within Meta apparently is underway. Now, in June, shortly after Trump was shot, Zuckerberg shared, seeing Donald Trump, we're quoting him here, seeing Donald Trump get up after getting shot in the face and pump his fist in the air with the American flag is one of the most badass things I've ever seen in my life. You probably remember that. Well, Let me give you the news as it was reported by the Daily Caller. It says here, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg is increasingly hostile to government regulation and skeptical of social justice. Sources familiar told the New York Times on Tuesday. So this started brewing earlier this week. After Zuck issued that little message about Donald Trump and what a badass thing that was, I started to suspect that maybe he was having some second thoughts about liberalism. So anyhow, the Daily Caller report goes on to say, people have spoken with Zuckerberg recently, say that his beliefs now most align with libertarianism or classic liberalism, and that the tech mogul has made moves to clamp down on left-wing activism within Meta. Zuckerberg's ideological trajectory tracks with a broader rightward shift occurring in the upper echelons of Silicon Valley, with many tech executives who've previously supported Democrats now throwing money behind former President Donald Trump. Now, I would suspect that Donald Trump is more liberal, libertarian-leaning anyhow. But, I mean, because look at how the Republican Party has attacked Trump on occasion. So then the Daily Caller report goes on to say that Zuckerberg is also attempting to mend his relationship with Trump, with the two sharing a cordial phone call and the president expressing gratitude for the tech CEO's kind words following the attempt on his life. So let me go back to what Zuckerberg wrote that day about the badass thing. He said, seeing Donald Trump get up after getting shot in the face and pump his fist in the air with the American flag is one of the most badass things I've ever seen in my life. On some level, as an American, it's like hard not to get behind or hard not to get kind of emotional about that spirit and that fight. And I think that that's why a lot of people like the guy. Yeah, well, that's part of it, Mark. There are a lot of other reasons why Donald Trump is so highly respected and regarded by people who intend to vote for him. And I think the people who intend to vote for Donald Trump are better educated people. Not formal education, better educated in this thing called life and what it's like to try to sustain life in our society. You know, by all rights, when you look at this country and the charter that is this country, in other words, our Constitution, it should be pretty easy to make a living here. You have more choice about what you want to do for a living. You don't have government telling you what you have to do to make a living. You can do whatever pretty much you want to do. And yet, because of government regulation, over-regulation, overreach, so many people find themselves limited in what they could do. And right now, frankly, you've got people who once used to be able to support a family themselves, having to hold down 2-3 jobs, their spouse also having to do the same thing, just to maintain the same standard of living that they enjoyed in the past. All right, so where the Zuckerberg story is concerned, here's what Business Insider wrote on the matter. This is interesting. Out of the public eye, Mark Zuckerberg identifies with libertarianism, or at least that's according to the few sources privy to his private political thoughts. As Zuckerberg attempts to convince Republicans that he and his company Meta are nonpartisan, sources told the New York Times that he's sunk into a political cynicism. In his effort to mend ties with the right, Zuckerberg has hired Republican strategist Brian Baker, who will aim to heal his relationship with right-wing media and operatives. Much of the animosity toward Zuckerberg trickles down from the top of the party, beginning with former President Trump himself. Zuckerberg suspended Trump's Facebook account after the events of January 6th and thus ignited the former president's anger, which, believe me, is something you don't want to do. Trump now seems to delight in bashing Zuckerberg, whom he threatened to imprison if he wins back the White House. He's declared support for TikTok simply because he's one of Meta's competitors, and in his most recent book, Trump included a photo of Zuckerberg and said that the tech leader engaged in a plot against the president. Well, all right, so we're going to backtrack a little bit to earlier and what I just told you. there has been a conversation between Donald Trump and Mark Zuckerberg, apparently a phone conversation, where apparently they are mending things. So is Zuckerberg having this big come to Jesus moment? Is he waking up? Well, again, as I said a few minutes ago, I think he's finally maturing. And eventually, we all mature to one degree or another. I have very, very low respect for anybody under the age of 50 who intends to vote for Kamala Harris. I mean, you don't do that if you're over 50 years old. Did I say under 50? I have very little respect for anybody over 50 who's going to vote for Kamala Harris. Because by age 50, you should have matured enough. You've lived enough of your life to know which party is generally better at supporting a decent economy. Now, the economy could have been a lot better under George W. Bush. But I think Bush was too entrenched or got entrenched with the deep state after he got to Washington. He was a good governor for Texas. Man, I liked him. When he was our governor, he did a great job of reaching out to the Democrats, and all things in Austin ran smoothly for the state of Texas under the George W. Bush governorship. But he wasn't governor for all that long, really. A couple of terms, and that was about it. But I'll never forget how highly regarded GWB was at the time that Bob Bullock, who was our Speaker of the House under the George W. Bush governorship, and he was a Democrat. Bullock was a Democrat. When Bullock passed away, his family asked Bush to give the eulogy, and he did. Those two men were friends. They were at opposite parties, but they were very close friends, George W. Bush and Bob Bullock. So I expected that same spirit to carry on when George W. Bush went to Washington. And I pretty much supported him because I just couldn't support the other side. But, you know, those days are gone. They're in the past. We got Donald Trump now, who I think he probably leans more libertarian. I don't see anything coming from Donald Trump that would indicate that he's an extremely loyal Republican, except for the fact that he's running the party right now. I mean, his daughter is a co-chairman of the RNC, so that's a good sign. And it's really interesting to see the rats who have been abandoning the Republican ship since Trump has basically been running the party. Most notably, Liz Cheney and then her dad, Dick Cheney. So with Mark Zuckerberg now kind of seeking middle ground. Now, I don't know if he's doing this to save his company or if he genuinely means this. Time will answer that. But at least it's going to be interesting to watch Mark Zuckerberg as he scurries into a new political arena. And if he's indeed a libertarian, which I get the feeling he is, he's probably very sincere about this. It's going to be interesting how that manifests itself where his company is concerned. From our friends at the Epoch Times, security and communication lapses between the Secret Service and local law enforcement are to blame for not sooner thwarting the July 13th attempted assassination of Donald Trump. That was that event up there in, it was a campaign rally in Butler, PA. Now, this is according to a bipartisan interim Senate report, and this was just released the other day. What was that, Wednesday? And the report was jointly released by the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee and the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations as the Secret Service is facing continued scrutiny after two attempted assassinations of Donald Trump. And we're finding out all kinds of interesting things. We're finding out that Iran is currently trying to do away with Donald Trump. Understandable, though. But Senator Gary Peters, Democrat out of Michigan, said in a statement announcing the report's release, he says, from planning missteps to the siloed and flawed communication to the lack of ineffective coordination between law enforcement to the breakdowns in technology, the Secret Service's failures that allowed an assassination attempt on former President Trump at his July 13th rally were shocking, unacceptable and preventable, and they led to tragic consequences. Well, one of the 12 findings in the report was that the Secret Service was informed of a suspicious individual with a rangefinder around the warehouse. Of course, that suspect turned out to be Thomas Matthew Crooks. And then this guy ends up on the roof about 27 minutes before the shooting. That should never have been allowed to happen. A local law enforcement officer hoisted to the roof line by a colleague encountered Crooks, but ducked back down after Crooks pointed his gun at him. And that's according to an official Secret Service report about the incident that was released on September 20th. Now, the Secret Service security room was notified of this at 5:44 p.m. And the agency's counter-sniper team leader was notified a minute later, according to the report. And then, soon after, the Secret Service looked for the individual. Now, the lead advance agent, site agent, and site counterpart told the committee that they didn't get the information until after Crooks fired shots. So additionally, a local law enforcement officer notified fellow officers that Crooks was on a rooftop 3 minutes before the incident, according to the report. And that notification was passed on to the Secret Service about 2 minutes before the shooting. And the shooting began at 6:11 p.m. and Crooks was killed by the Secret Service almost immediately, according to the Secret Service. Now, what I would like to know is, why were they so hasty in cremating this guy, Crooks? I mean, this report is nice to have, but it sure leaves a lot of questions unanswered. As we head on into the weekend, let's head on over to the Comedy Corner with Tom Simmons.
I feel like a guest, you know. This is a cool city. It's everybody's so nice, you know. I'm a Lebanese American. Let me just start there, right? So the Lebanese in me is very passionate, very quick to anger, and the American in me isn't really sure where Lebanon is. Try it. I'm also married, you guys. I'm married to the girl of my dreams. I'm very lucky. Yeah, she's the coolest. We actually figured out the foolproof way to make a marriage work. What we do is my wife, Serena, makes all the little decisions, right? So I don't have to sweat any of that, right? And then I, of course, make the big decisions, and then she decides which decisions are big or little. So, yeah. Works out perfectly for her, and I pick our cereal. So whatever, I'm just saying. She's the best. Right? One of the things I love about her is she keeps me grounded, right? She calls me on my bull, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm one of these idealists. I got the answers for everything. I'm arguing with people in my living room trying to solve the Middle East, right? Like, here's what Israel-Palestine needs to do. They need to start from nonviolence and understanding. And I'm always like, would you please shut up, all right? You're not going to solve Israel-Palestine from our living room. Don't you have a sister that hasn't talked to you in a year and a half? Why don't you get your whole family to unblock you on Facebook and then you solve the Middle East? She's right. We got a little boy, right? We named our son Owen because that's what we figure we're going to be doing for the rest of our lives. Yeah, you got kids? Those things are not cheap, right? People are like, dude, you got to start saving for his college pronto, Tom. That's 30 grand a year minimum. Like, well, then he's going to be home colleged. Yeah, I don't have that kind of money laying around. He's going to the North Carolina School of Home College. I don't know if you have kids. My son's got it made, right? He doesn't even realize how lucky he's had it as a little boy, all right? First of all, he's got a father who believes in nonviolence. Yeah, which he tests all the time. I don't know about you. It's amazing how the whole day can turn around. Everybody's happy. The sun is shining down. Laughter's in the air. And then that little punk won't put his shoes on. Like, let's go. Put your shoes on. How many times did I tell you? It's frustrating, right? Martin Luther King had kids. He was committed to nonviolence. Right? I don't know how he did it. Like, let's go. Put your shoes on or we are marching. I've had it. They won't eat their vegetables again, Coretta. Grab the picket signs. Here we go, around the kitchen. Eat your peas! Eat your peas! Well, I don't know. It's not easy, right? My wife wasn't always on board with the nonviolence thing. Right, raising kids is hard. You know, when I met my wife, she wanted to have 4 or 5 kids, and then we had Owen, and she was like, this is it. one day. He's like, why can't I be a big brother? Well, maybe you should have thought of that when you were one. Maybe slept through the night a few more times. Yeah, there's a reason why kids are so cute. It's so you won't throw them in a dumpster at 3 a.m. Yeah, and if you're not laughing, you don't have kids. That's my philosophy on that.
Have a terrific and restful weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's bombastic blogcast, believe me. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time this weekend just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?